What's up, my freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of stabby goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show. My name is Jonathan McNeese. This is my co-host, Mr. Chase Boatwright.
Greetings from Podcast Purgatory.
So, we go ahead and let the folks know here that we are re-recording the very beginning of the podcast here because yes, we had some of our many technical difficulties that we seem to have pretty regular. So we're going to do our normal little intro, catching up with each other, and then you guys will see it. It'll kind of jump to the rest of our conversation because luckily we kind of only lost the beginning of it. So, yeah, that's, and while we're talking about technical stuff, Chase, I think you had a note that you wanted to make about a little small change in the format too, didn't you?
Yes. Due to issues with copyright and stuff, not necessarily in the United States, but apparently in like most of Europe and Canada and stuff, our old music is no longer available to be used due to like something changed with the who owns the copyright. And so if those of you who, you know, listened to last episode probably noticed it was different music. So that will be the music going forward. I apologize. I liked the old music. I think it kind of fit, but I tried to find something that kind of worked with our vibe, and I think I got something. I think it's called like Born in the Bayou or Down on the Bayou or something. It kind of has a southern twang to it, so I think it fits for us. And so, yeah, I just wanted to address that. That was something we didn't get to address in the first rendition of this, so I guess there's one positive of having to redo it, you know.
That's right. Yeah, I like the old, I like the new too, but to be honest, everybody's here to hear our angelic voices anyway. They're not here for the music, so.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Sure, but, you know, I know, like, I've listened to podcasts, and then, you know, they get a certain number of episodes in, and they change their intro music, and it just never felt right. You know, that music kind of got you in that mindset that, you know, that was the,
yeah,
like, you know, if you're watching Monday Night Football, you want to hear the dun, 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 dun. Like, you know, that's the thing. You can't change the thing, but we're sorry we had to change the thing due to things outside
build
of our
that
control.
Association. So, but,
you know,
yeah,
I am not a musician, so I couldn't play a funky little tune for us. So, you know, and I don't think Jonathan has that ability either. So we can't necessarily produce something that's our own copyright. Yeah, but
no. So we'll
one thing we did want to mention real quick was, one thing we did want to mention was our week in the shop. So, you want to tell the people how last week went in the shop for you?
Yeah, so it was good. We had a short week, a little bit of a short week. We had to leave out on Thursday to head out to CanCon, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but. So I only had Monday through Wednesday in the shop, but we had a pretty good week. The guys did a great job while I was gone finishing out the week. We're cranking along. We've got a lot of different projects going. I'm really working hard right now on getting new stuff out. I'm very much in creative mode right now, so be on the lookout for new stuff, new variations, new products, all kinds of stuff. I'm on a mission to get us a lot more variety in our lineup. So stay tuned for that. I think I mentioned before that we have this didn't really affect last week, but we've got a new used machine coming this coming week. Actually, it'll be the end of this week when you're listening to this. It'll be coming in. So that's exciting. Nice. We're getting ready to make room and make ready for that. But yeah, other than that, we were basically just doing our thing and cranking as best we could this week. This past week. How about you?
Sweet. Kind of the same. I was a little under the weather for most of the week. Me and my daughter had a bit of a sinus infection, but I still kind of kept going. Got a batch of fixed blades that's going to DLT for their 12 Days of Christmas event, and getting really close. I came in from the shop. I was sharpening them to re-record this, so they're getting pretty close now. I marked them, you know, did all the logo and stuff today, and getting kind of the finishing touches on those, working on a few other orders and stuff. But yeah, it was a fairly good week, pretty productive overall, even though I was you know, then another thing I wanted to mention in this intro is I apologize for the sniffles and the sniffs and stuff that I have going throughout the whole podcast. That's I tried to keep it to a minimum, but it happens. I'm sorry. It was a pretty good week.
Rather be here with some sniffles than have to miss. So that it all works out. Hopefully you'll be feeling completely better here within the next couple of days.
I hope so. With it getting down to like 22 degrees tonight, I'm not looking forward to tomorrow in the shop. Yeah. But
yeah, that's probably not going to help anything, but get ready to bundle up, I guess. All right. Well, was there anything else that pertinent that we?
I don't really think so. That was pretty much it. That was lost was, you know, what you did last week, what I did last week, and sort of some general pleasantries and stuff. Right after this, you guys will hear how CanCon Blade Show Tactical went for Jonathan. He was there. I was not. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it. So appreciate you guys listening in spite of our technical difficulties. We're going to try to patch this together here and hope you enjoy, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, and y'all enjoy. Thanks. Of you being out of the shop this week, how was Blade Show Tactical or CanCon?
It was good. It was a lot of fun. It was a little bigger this year. I don't know how many more vendors we had, but it was definitely more vendors there. For sure, the crowd was a little bit bigger too. And, you know, people, I think maybe that being the second year, they're starting to figure out that we're there. You know, the majority of the people that are coming to that are coming for the suppressed shoot. But, so we get a lot of traffic that are people that are not really, you know, just, oh, there's knives here, and they go look at the knives. And there was a good handful that was there, you know, for the knife side of things, which was great. But overall, it was great. We got to talk to a lot of people that, like I said, are kind of outside the normal knife show people. They're not real knife freaks. Yeah. You know, they probably like knives, but they're just not as knowledgeable about them and stuff. So gives us a great chance to educate people. And so, yeah, it was good. We had a lot of good conversations. It was a really good show. I enjoyed it a lot. So on the note of the talking to people that are non-knife people, that got me thinking about it a lot this weekend, because we've all been there, whether it be us from selling knives or those of you that collect and stuff, and, you know, you're showing your knife to somebody that's not a knife freak, and they, you know, they end up asking how much it was, or you tell them or whatever. And then they, you know, you can see it in their eyes that they kind of freak out because of how expensive it is, you know, or they'll actually say it like, oh my God, really? Or, you know, like nobody's, to their credit, nobody said this weekend, but like, you know, you can get the people like gun guys and like, oh, I could buy a new, you know, a new pistol for that. I could buy a Glock for that or whatever, you know. They're just not used to the level of stuff that we're used to in, you know, in knives. So I've thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, and it made me think a lot about it this weekend, but like ways to kind of get people to understand, you know, without just having just major sticker shock and just thinking that we're insane or whatever, and get them to understand what the deal is with, you know, with the knife industry. And the best way that I've come up with is to try to find a way to make it relate to something that they are more familiar with. So for the gun guys, for example, it's like, you know, oh man, why is it so expensive or whatever? Well, you can tell them all the ins and outs of, like, you know, of the features of the knife and it's American made and all that. But still, if they're not like a knife freak, then all the features of the knife, you know, half of them don't even know what a frame lock is. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to, you know, telling them about the bearings and the this and the that is not necessarily going to, like, make them understand why it's so expensive. But if you can relate it to something they're familiar with, so yeah, like for guns, for sure. Like what I was telling them, like, you know, this is not like just going and buying like a stock, you know, run of the mill Glock at Academy Sports. This is more like going and buying something from like Wilson Combat or Nighthawk Customs or whatever. Like there's different levels to the, you know, typically with most industries, there's good, better, best, right? As far as, you know, the best would be like premium brands and stuff. So there's usually lower end, middle, premium. And so if you can get people to relate to that in an industry that they're used to, you know, like we have guys around here, a lot of guys are big into bass fishing, you know, and I'll relate it to them. I'm like, look, like you guys are paying like $400 or $500 for a rod, $300 or $400 or $500 for a reel. I've seen freaking, you know, lures that are almost $100, like that you're throwing out in the water and really good chance you're going to lose, you know, but then your eyes get big at a $600 knife, you know, that doesn't track to me, but it's just because they're not familiar with it. You know, and you start relating it to that and you're like, look, this is not like going and buying a rod at Walmart or Academy. This is, you know, this is like your high end rod that you go and fish your tournaments with the high end reel on it and all your high end baits. And, you know, it can start to click for them when you relate it to that. And like I said, there's, you know, you can find most men have some kind of hobby that has expensive levels to it. Well, every hobby has expensive levels to it that I've come across. So whether they actually own the stuff or not, they're at least familiar with it. And like, you know, oh yeah, like I, you know, somebody's into guitars. Well, there's a, you know, really expensive guitars that they may not be able to afford them, but they're at least aware of them. And it doesn't seem so crazy to them that the guitar costs that much because they're into them and they understand what goes into that guitar, what makes it special. So trying to find a way to get them to relate to a subject that they're more familiar with and explain it to them that it's levels, it's, you know, good, better, best, whatever, with in every industry. And I feel like they can, that doesn't mean they're instantly going to go out and spend $500 or $600 on a knife, but like you mentioned, when we were talking about it earlier, it plants a seed, you know, they may start thinking about it differently then and be like, oh, well, this is a cool knife for $100. That's expensive, but you know, maybe it actually is worth it. And then 6 months, a year down the road, they may be buying $500 or $600 knives, or they may be buying $2,000 knives. You know, you never know. So,
yeah, that's just always an interesting conversation when you're trying to, you know, have that relatable moment to people who aren't necessarily as enthralled with knives and aren't, you know, sort of all encompassed within it. You know, I've definitely had that friend, you know, had that conversation with friends and family. Like my best friend is way more into guns than I am. And like, you know, basically I told him like, you're carrying a High Point knife and, you know, but you're carrying a Glock on your side. Like yeah. That's sort of the disparity of the things you're working with here. And there's different levels to this stuff. And, you know, now I've actually got him to where he's carrying a Spyderco instead of, you know, Tech Force or whatever came from the gas station. So,
nice.
I think anybody, like you said, anybody who's been in this knife game has had to have that conversation or that defense of like, hey, what's wrong with you? Why are you buying multiple $100 knives or $1,000 knives or whatever your level is? And,
right.
You know, it's always, you know, you definitely have to think about how to approach it. And, you know, some people just kind of like brush it off and say, well, I like it. And while that is, you know, fair enough in your own point, your money, do what you want, you know, I think as a business, as a, you know, the face of a business or the, you know, business owner or whatever, I think it is good to kind of, like you said, relate it to something or dig a little deeper into that and try to connect it to something and kind of plant that seed of, you know, probably not going to be a customer that day, especially if you're asking, you know, custom knife maker or high end knife maker money. But like I said, you know, further down the road, you know, I've got friends that have bought Benchmades and, you know, Chris Reeves and stuff, even since I kind of got them into knives that way, like, you know, their taste kind of went up and up after giving them their first Kershaw or, you know, cheap Spyderco or something like that. So it's definitely interesting.
Yep. Yep. And I think this is a, you know, that actually kind of opens up a little bit. We may have a bigger conversation about this on another episode, but like, you know, we actually as makers or business owners, whatever, we have obviously a vested interest in trying to bring more people into, you know, the customer base and into the, you know, the knife world. But honestly, when you stop and think about it, like it's good for all of us. Like as far as like if you're a collector, you know, if you're the consumer, yep, having more customers and growing it is beneficial to all of us. Cause if there's the more customers there are, the more, you know, the better the companies can do, the better the companies do, the better they're able to, you know, offer more stuff. So like, you know, if if you're frustrated because you can't get stuff from people, it's hard to get. Well, if they have more customers and they can continue to build their business and grow it and make more stuff and it makes some of it more available, there's always a balance there between the number of customers and the availability or whatever. But like, it just, as a general rule, it just helps the industry in general. The more people we can get into it, we always need fresh blood coming into the industry. So, keep that in mind when you're talking to people. Don't just, blow them off and whatever, you don't get it or whatever, but like, just if you can make them relate to it, find something that they can relate to. Again, you're not trying to sell them something right off the bat, but you may plant that seed, like you said, and then, who knows what may happen down the road. So
for sure. I've seen it happen more than once, and it's, it's always fun for me to kind of see them starting to get it, to understand, to see that, seed analogy that we keep going back to kind of take root and start to grow and blossom. And as they, they figure out like, okay, I liked this one. It was pretty good. Let's try this next one that maybe, $10, $20 more and, kind of slowly working that way up. And it's, very rewarding, I guess, to see that.
Yep, for sure. All right. So yeah, that's always a good thing to discuss, but I believe you had a segment to bring back that we haven't done in a while, the Freak of the Week, right?
Indeed I do. This week I had the local guy contact me, a guy that lives maybe 10 minutes away, asked me to make a sheath for a knife that he had got off of an Instagram giveaway. And it's a maker I've been wanting to feature on this segment anyway. And when he said, hey, can you make a sheath for this? I was like, yeah, mainly because I want to check out the knife. Because I've seen this maker's work on Instagram a lot, and I followed him for a while now. And I really wanted to check out his stuff in person. But this is the case it came in, and this is the knife, and the maker is a young man named Jaden Schubert, and his Instagram is Fox River Blades. And I've been following him for a few years now. I don't remember exactly how long, but just watching his craft go up and up, and he's very impressive in a number of different ways. I like his design style. I like his, the technical aspects, the fit and finish, the symmetry, all that is good. If not great. But the other impressive part upon it is he started when he was 14 or 15 years old. That's something that I'm always impressed by because that never even crossed my mind when I was 14 or 15 years old. I was too busy worried about girls and football and getting a truck and, teenager things, then yeah. I never even thought that I could make a knife when I was that age. But he's 22 now, so he's still a fairly young guy. But also not just the fact that he's an incredibly impressive young knife maker. A couple years ago, he actually got in a car accident and was paralyzed. And so he's doing all of this. He had to basically relearn how to make knives after the accident and all that. And he somehow just keeps getting better and better, even with the limitations that life has thrown at him, and the obstacles, I should say, life has thrown at him. And he continues to impress. And every time, his finishes keep seeming to get better. He seems to do a good job on the business aspect of it too. And the social media game, especially, he's very active, very diverse, and a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, really excited to give Jaden a shout out. I've talked with him a few times here and there. I'm not like super great friends with him, but we talk a little bit on Instagram here and there, and just very, very impressive young maker that I believe deserves more light coming his way.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with him until you told me about him, but I went and looked at his work, and yeah, you're right. It's phenomenal looking work. So haven't had the pleasure to check one out in person yet, but they look really nice. So yeah, that's impressive all the way around. Really cool.
Yeah. I mean, so. I'm already impressed when young people start doing this at and are doing a really good job at it. That always impresses me, just because I couldn't get over that hump for a long time. And so, you know, I always just, like I said, it just constantly impresses me. And then the fact of being in a wheelchair and having, you know, sort of a shitty hand dealt, and still just being like, oh, well, we'll keep doing it anyway. That's a dog mentality, and I appreciate that. And so, I wish I could. Unfortunately, this one's just, you know, visiting for a little while, and I don't get to keep it. But it was funny. I actually talked to Jaden about this very design a couple weeks, you know, before he did the giveaway, and was talking with him about it. And then it's in my hand a few weeks later. So it's just real cool. But y'all go give him a follow. It's at Fox River Blades on Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Go check him out. Like Jay said, great guy, doing great work, and definitely deserves some recognition. So go check him out. So sure. I believe we had at least one question to go over this week. Yeah, the one that's a little kind of introduced a little show and tell with it, maybe.
Indeed, yes. And this is from David Wagner, good listener of the show and a fellow maker that I've mentioned on here before. He said, what are a couple of your favorite knives from each of your own collections that you did not make? So excluding the ones that, you know, we made ourselves, which those probably wouldn't be in my favorites anyway. Usually the ones I keep are not my favorites. They're my least favorites by the time I get done with them. I just, you know, if it's functional enough, I'm not going to throw it away. I'll at least keep it and use it myself. Did you want to go ahead and start and show the people some of your favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was kind of cool because, like, I don't spend a lot of time, like, with my collection. I don't really have that much of a collection, honestly. I kind of, you know, I've picked a few things up along the way here and there. But I, you know, when I started learning about higher end knives and stuff, I kind of dove almost immediately into the, you know, making side of things, and have focused most of my attention on that the entire time. So, but obviously being in the industry and all that, I've been a knife freak. I've picked some stuff up here and there. So, I don't have a bunch of super high end stuff, but I do have some stuff that either just is cool to me or has some sentimental meaning. So anyway, so I'm going to start with what's probably the number one on the list, which would be, a lot of you guys probably have never heard of this maker, this brand, because unfortunately we lost him back in 2015. Ram Maramba, he went by Zero Knives, was his company name. And he was a custom maker. He had a design with Boker. Not sure if they're still producing it or not, and I can't remember the name of the design, but I actually have one of those too.
The Ram, or the ROM.
They may have. I can't remember. I've got one of those, but then actually, Ram and I were friends. We weren't super, super close, but you know, we were, you know, knife maker buddies. You know how it is. Like you talk to them at shows, you know, maybe communicate with them a little bit in between here and there with some questions or some whatever. And, the year he passed, that year in 2015, not long before Blade Show, I think it was within like a month or so of Blade Show, he passed. And, we had actually been talking about doing a collab of some sort and hadn't nailed anything down yet. And that year his table had moved, and he was actually supposed to be at the table beside me that year. So I was looking forward to that and all that. And anyway, tragically, we lost him. So, and Ram was a young guy. He's several years younger than me. So, on to the knife, and I do not know the model of it. But it's a frame lock. It's one of his customs. Just really cool. He had really cool designs. I really love the aesthetics of his design. So I should have done a little more research. You can't find as much stuff about him anymore since it's been, you know, he's been gone a while now. And he was, you know, he was a custom maker, so he didn't have just tons of product out there. It's not like a production company or even like mid-tech type stuff where there's tons of stuff out there. So anyway, but yeah, that's probably the one that has, outside of, you know, ones that I've made myself that have sentimental value for being the first or the whatever or something. But outside of that, that's probably my number one, just because of the sentimental value on it. So next actually is, I didn't realize it until just now, but I guess I've got a theme going here because on these first couple, at least, because this is also from a maker that passed, but I did not personally know him. He passed, I believe, before I got into making knives. Cause by the time I learned about him, it was all, you know, he was already gone. But Rob Simonich, he was a really good custom maker. And from what I understand, actually, you know, I mentioned this last week on last week's show with Bobby that he was talking about that Rob Simonich was one of the first ones that started doing like some mid-tech stuff, you know, kind of bridging that gap between custom and production and doing some mid-tech stuff. And I don't know if he did more than one model or what all he did, but I don't think it was a lot. Because if I understand the timeline and stuff right, I think he passed not too long after he started doing this mid-tech stuff. So I think this one is called, let's see, hold on. It doesn't have the name on it. I want to say it's maybe called the Raven, but I don't remember for sure.
I think so.
But it's a super cool fixed blade. Yeah, okay. My memory served me that time. Just a really cool, I really, really, really like the story of it, and, you know, coming from somebody that was a talented maker that we lost is, you know, that's one thing, but like, I really, really dig the actual design. It's just a really cool, got a slight recurve to it. I believe this is probably DLC coating on the blade. I actually traded for this. I didn't get any kind of, info card or anything on it. G10 grips, really cool. Has his, you know, the bison there was like his logo. So it's got that engraved in both sides on the G10. Just a really cool design. I really like it a lot. It's just the right size for me. It's not a big fighter. It's like a medium size fighter. Like, it's just really well done. So that one's really cool. I mean, it's one of those that I actually like to carry and like to maybe, you know, put on my kit or whatever, but like, I also don't want to mess it up knowing that it's special and that it was a, you know, a limited amount of these were ever made and, you know, him being gone, it's like,
that's one of the times, like, I believe in Safe Queens is like, you know, not necessarily price tag, but value, I guess.
Sentimental value.
And
Yeah. What it means to you. Yeah. So I've got a couple of other, those are probably my top two, which again, I guess, I don't know, maybe that's showing my sentimentality with the being both of them are from people that have passed, but we'll move on to one or two that for not, it's tragic, fortunately. All right, so another one that I've got that is really cool, I think, is from Lucas Burnley. And so this is one of his Quakens, which were, and I'm sure still are, super popular. Him and Tom Crine and some other guys were really hitting their stride and getting really popular back in the days when I was first getting into making knives and on the USN. And him and Tom both actually were two of the first knife makers that I talked to at the first blade show I went to and walked around and had some of my knives to get feedback on from makers. So it's pretty cool. He's always been super, super cool guy. So, this is actually one, I got this one in a trade also. Can you guys tell I like to trade? You won't be able to probably see it on the camera, but it's got, this was from, I don't know the full story on it, but it was from, it's engraved with USN, CP2, I think I believe it was like a cigar smokers group or whatever. Like, he did it for like a limited run of some for like a specific group of like cigar aficionados or whatever. So anyway, okay. I ended up getting to get into that in a trade years ago. So that's cool. I like having that one since it's from, number one, it's a custom and it's from somebody that I admired, have always admired and, you know, like their work. So that makes it really cool. All right, so moving along, I brought several. I couldn't narrow it down to just a couple. But the other one that's not as special to me, but just I think is a cool knife, is the little Spyderco. Crap, I'm going to blank out on what they call their little Bailey song, whatever. Sorry, guys, I'm like redneck. I just say it however I want to. Anyway, do you happen to remember the name of this, Chase?
Like actual Balisong from Spyderco?
Oh, yeah, you can't see it. Sorry, I forgot.
No.
Yeah, it's an actual, it's like a little, I can't remember the name of it. I apologize, guys, but it's, you guys probably know it. They don't make a ton of them, I don't think, and I'm not sure if they currently are in the lineup or not, Which when I saw this one a while back, I snagged it. Yeah, it's just a really cool, and I'm not even like a big Bailey Song guy. I thought it was cool. So it's kind of unique. So anyway, I just really like it. And then I got one more that actually does kind of go back to, so Ram that I was talking about, Zero Knives at the beginning. So this is some that, a few years ago, a couple of guys took, some of Ram's designs, and I think that they may have actually already had the blanks for them. I don't know, but they did like a fundraiser to help his family and stuff. And Ken Brock, another really cool, awesome custom maker, he took this and basically finished out the blank or whatever and made it. It's marked as Zero Designs on that side, and Ken put his mark on that side. Just another really cool design from Ram, and Ken's a beast at grinding and stuff. So it's pretty killer. So another one of those I'd actually kind of like to carry, because it's a really cool design, just a little finger hole, like got a great grip on it. So anyway, really, really cool design. I like it a lot. So that will be my last kind of runner up, I guess. And it still has that nod to my friend that we lost. So, it's got that extra special meaning to it. So that's awesome. What have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to probably seem a little heartless in comparison, because I just went, I cut all sentimentality out. I just said, what are my favorite knives, just like on the surface. So I promise I'm not heartless. Have plenty of sentimental knives. I just went with like first top of mind, what do I like to carry? And first one would be this the Ferrum Forge Archbishop. They made 200 of these in 2015 or 2016. I can't remember, but when these came out, they were mid-techs that Elliot and his brother Chris did in their shop in San Diego. So like, they were like $550 at the time. And that was right when I was kind of, like we were talking about, kind of climbing that ladder of understanding how much, climbing the ladder of price of knives, and my tastes were going up and stuff. But even though I liked it a whole lot, I could not afford it at the time. And probably still couldn't swing $550 for a knife right now, but I was able to acquire this one thanks to a good friend and customer that did a little trade for me, trade with me on a fixed blade and something else. I don't remember what, but I was finally able to get one. It's M390 steel titanium, and this is, back to a couple episodes ago when we were talking about knives used to be thick. It's a thick boy, but it cuts well. It has a very unique sound when it's open, but I've just always loved the design a lot. I had aspirations whenever I first got into knife making of doing it with my brother. So I really admired guys like Elliot and Chris and the Grimsmo brothers, and those sort of brother operations really excited me at the time. So, and the Archbishop was definitely always one that was my favorite design of theirs by far. So that'd be first on my list. All right. So on to the next one, kind of all over the place for me, I guess. The next one would be CRKT PLR, which when this knife came out, I think was roughly around $30, may have been under $30. And it's, CRKT, it's made overseas. It's nothing special in any sense of the word. I just love the design, and I've carried this knife more times than I can count. And as you can see, I've even customized it a good bit. I laser engraved it back in Jonathan's old shop. I reground the blade and etched in that little pirate medallion logo. I heat colored all the screws and wire wheeled them. At one point I had made a backspacer and put it in here, but I ended up taking it out because I didn't actually spend enough time to get the backspacer to the right dimension or make sure it was flat enough. And so it was kind of wonky, but another knife that I really love, and I use it and carry it all the time. It's just a small little, I guess, 2-inch blade, little sheep's foot. And you know, has that forward finger choil, and I just love it. I've always been a big fan of Jesper Voxnay's as far as designs go, and you know, I think this knife was either the first design of his that I got or one of the first, and that has pretty much stayed one of my favorites ever since. Even though it's nothing, like I said, nothing special, nothing exciting, just I just like it. So there's that one. Next one would look familiar to Jonathan if he could see it.
I'll pretend.
And that would be this. What?
I said I'll pretend.
Pretend, yeah, pretend. Pretend hard. This is the McNeese Knives Fixed Killer B. And this is actually one of the two prototypes for the Fixed Killer B that he made. And he was finishing this up a week or two. Like the first day I was in the shop, this was like getting laser engraved and like getting sharpened and stuff. Like the first time I was working for you, this was like just about to go out the door. And so I didn't actually like help make this or anything. I saw it kind of in progress just by hanging around and doing stuff up there at your shop. But I always loved the design, and I've told Jonathan this many times, he knows. But actually, I think one of the first things I did in your shop was actually I did the laser engraving on this, which means I just pushed the buttons, but I set the knife up there and, you know, did it. And you got mad because I made LMAX way too big, but put the proto down there. So this is one of two prototypes that he did for this design, and I've loved it. I loved it then. I wanted it then. Couldn't quite, you know, maybe I just didn't want to be like, you know, first day of the shop, be like, hey, can I buy that? Like, but eventually it found its way back to me, and I love it. It's one of my favorites, little 2.5-inch Wardenclyffe or so. Got that sort of Spanish notch, kind of blade shape like McBee or the original Killer Bee folder had. And yeah, it's just, I love it. And got this cool little leather sheath for it. It's got Sam on it. And yeah, just always been one of my favorites. And so that's pretty much my top three. I was going to give an honorable mention also to the venerable Swiss Army Knife Tinker, the Victorinox Tinker. This particular one is probably my favorite because it originally was one that came from DLT and had like the Warthog, you know, like the World War II nose art graphics and stuff. But I carried it so much that all of those graphics wore off and it was just blank white. And so I ordered some brass scales off the internet, and when they got to me, they were sort of unfinished and unchamfered and stuff. And so I did some chamfering, I did some file work, then I did some lasering on it, and most of the lasering is kind of already scratched off, but you can kind of see the little compass rose up there on it now. But this knife is in my pocket pretty much every day, unless it's one of my other Swiss Army knives. And so, yeah, I've always been a big Swiss Army knife fan, and so just wanted to give a honorable mention to that. So, not nearly as you know, sentimental or anything like that as you went, but I figured I would be in there all day if I tried to, you know, sort out sentimentality, and I figured right. I wouldn't be able to choose.
Yeah, so I think it's actually kind of good that we went different routes with it. That, you know, kind of showed both kind of two reasons why people collect stuff or why it means special stuff to them. You know what I mean? Like why they can be special. It can be sentimentality. It can be just that it's a cool design and you just really like, you know, you just really vibe with that design or whatever. So I think that actually worked out great. We didn't even plan it.
Yeah, no plan at all. Just, that's weird. I feel like, I feel like we kind of did a role reversal there almost. I feel like, I don't know. I would be one to typically go more sentimentality and you would be go like straight user. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like I usually tend to overthink the things.
Yeah. Well, for me is, I mean, I've for so long now, like I'll occasionally carry something else along with it. But like I've for so long now, I've been carrying my own stuff that, you know, and that's not just, it's not because there's not other great stuff out there that I like to carry. I just, you know, that way I know what it can do. I can truly say that I've carried one of these and used it for months or years or whatever. And then I can learn things about it that I might need to change, or, you know, it's true testing, you know what I mean? So I feel like that, you know, it's not really an ego thing. I just don't feel right to not carry and use, you know, I'm asking other people to shell out hard earned money to carry something that, you know, that we make. And so I'm not going to be willing to carry it myself. Then that's kind of, you know, like I said, I mix it up every now and then. And very rarely do I not have one of ours on me. It's usually a second or third option that I'll maybe have, you know, on me that is something else. But anyway, yeah. So going off strictly just something that I'm not that big of a collector. So like, I do have some knives that are just stuff that I thought was cool designs or whatever. They're just, you know, like as I was looking for these, I found a case knife and an Alomar, both that were like still brand new in the box that I pulled out and didn't even remember what they were until I pulled them out of the box. But both really cool designs that I like. I've never actually carried them. So,
And, you know, like speaking on the like carrying your own stuff, like, I mean, it is always, you know, I usually carry one of my folders that I've made and one of my fixed blades that I've made, and, you know, to use them and to do all that stuff. But also when anytime you may be in mixed company or out in public and, you know, that question may be asked of like, oh, you're a knife maker. And it's kind of good to have like a business card, you know, except, you know, in the form of a knife on you in those moments. Anytime I end up like leaving the house, like I'll generally put one of my knives in my pocket, and the day I don't is usually the day I get asked about it. So
I'm the same way, but also then like I'll occasionally be like, okay, I need to put something, you know, a new fresh one in my pocket or whatever, because like inevitably somebody asks and then and I pull it out, and you know me, I'm not easy on stuff. Like, it's beat to shit. It's dirty. It's probably still got tape residue or something on the blade. Like, it's like, which, you know, in some ways is good. They can see I'm actually using it or whatever. But if you're like trying to pull something out and impress somebody, you know, it's probably not necessarily the best first impression either. So I guess it just kind of depends what, if they value, you know, sparkly and new more or functionality more. Cause you can look at mine and definitely tell that I've been using them for the functionality.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of learned that early on, like when I would keep my own stuff and, you know, of course I wanted to use it and carry it and stuff, but then like on down the line, I started being like, okay, this one actually looks good. I'm going to keep it looking good and only carry it, you know, I'm not going to carry it in the shop or when I'm out in the yard working and stuff. I'm going to try to actually keep it, you know, I'll cut stuff with it. I'll cut Amazon boxes and stuff like that, but I'm not going to, you know, cut down a, you know, try to go out there and limb trees with it or anything, you know, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to have some, you know, showier pieces. Then I also have my beaters that, you know, pretty much roll with me every day.
Your go to town knife. I definitely
understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a thing in the gun world. It's like, is it church gun or Sunday gun or whatever, where people, you know, pull out their fancy pistol to carry on to church on Sunday or whatever. So kind of the same thought. Yeah. I think that's really cool. I'm glad. Thank you for asking that question. That was awesome. It made me pull out like some of these stuff. I honestly, off the top of my head, I had one or two in mind, but then when I started digging through my box of stuff, I was like, oh, well, there we go. That one qualifies. So got to see some stuff I haven't looked through in a while. So that was really cool. Thank you for asking that. So I think we're probably talked about long enough here. So we'll go ahead and wrap up today. But guys, we really appreciate you guys. Even at every show I go to, people are coming up to me and telling me that they listen to the podcast and stuff or watch the podcast on YouTube. So it's really cool. We really appreciate you guys. If you would do us a favor, number one, share the show out, let other people know that, you know, what we're doing, because there's still a lot of people that don't even know we're doing a podcast. So we appreciate it if you'd share it, like, subscribe, hit that bell notification button, and help us to grow this thing. We always appreciate you. And I did want to make one personal note real quick. We are going to be having a drop this week. We've been hit or miss with the shows that we've been doing. So it'll be going out in our newsletter. And actually, that's one more thing I want to mention for both of us. Be great if you guys are not already, if you would sign up for our newsletters, that would help us out a lot too, because building our email list is how we know we can stay in contact with you guys, no matter what Instagram and Facebook and all that other stuff does to us as far as suppressing our stuff. So I appreciate it if you'd get signed up for both of those. And then for questions, comments, that kind of stuff, which we would greatly appreciate all of those. I mean, we were able to make most of an episode out of one question this week. So if you've got a question or a subject you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know. And Chase, what's the email that they need to send that into?
That is knifefreakshow@gmail.com with one S, knifefreakshow@gmail.com. Hit us there with questions, suggestions, knife stories, whatever you got.
Yep. We greatly appreciate you guys. You guys are always great about hitting us up with good feedback and stuff. So we really appreciate you. Hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
And let your freak flag fly.